He showered fast and dressed in the tiny bathroom and made the bed and sat on it. A minute later, he heard the scrape of a chair and small, fast feet on the boards and an inexpert knock on his door. It opened immediately, and a boy stuck his head inside. The kid was maybe 7 years old. He was a miniature version of Andrew Peterson. His face was equal parts resentment at being sent to do a chore, and apprehension for what he might find, and open curiosity about what he had actually found. He stared for a second and said, "Mama says come get a cup of coffee." Then he disappeared. By the time Reacher got through the door, both children had left the kitchen. He could hear them running up the stairs. He imagined he could see disturbances in the air behind them. Dust and vortexes like a cartoon. Their parents were sitting quietly at the table. They were dressed the same as the day before. Peterson in uniform, his wife in sweater and pants. They weren't talking. Any kind of conversation would have been drowned out by running feet above. Reacher took coffee from the pot, and by the time he was back at the table, Peterson had gotten up and was on his way out to the barn to start the pickup to plow his way out to the street. His wife was on her way upstairs to make sure the children were ready. A minute later, both boys ran down the stairs and crashed out through the door. Reacher heard the rattle of a heavy diesel engine and saw a glimpse of yellow through the snow. The school bus, apparently right on schedule, undeterred by the weather. A minute after that, the house was completely silent. Kim didn't come back to the kitchen. Reacher got nothing to eat. No big deal. He was used to being hungry. He sat alone until Peterson stuck his head in the hallway and called for him. He took the borrowed highway patrol coat from the hook and headed out. 5 to 8 in the morning. 44 hours to go. The lawyer was wrestling with his garage door again. There was a new foot of snow out on the driveway, and it had drifted a little against the door, jamming it in its tracks. He had his overshoes on, and he had his shovel in his hand. The motor on the garage ceiling was straining. He grabbed the inside handle and jerked upward. The mechanism's chains bucked and bounced, and the door came up in a rush, and the peak of the snowdrift outside fell inward. He shoveled it back out, and then started his car and got ready to face his day. His day began with breakfast. He had taken to eating it out. In some ways, normal small-town behavior. A coffee shop, some banter, some networking, some connections, all valuable, but not worth more than a half hour's investment, 45 minutes at the most. Now he was spending at least an hour in his booth, sometimes an hour and a half. He was afraid to go to work. The message forms his firm used were yellow. Every morning his secretary handed him a wad. Most were innocent. But some said, "Client requests conference, re case number 517713. There was no case with that number. No file. Nothing written down. Such a note was a code. An instruction, really, to head up to the prison and take mental dictation. Most days he got no such note. Some days he did. There was no way of predicting it. It was a part of his morning ritual now, to stand in front of his secretary's desk, with his hand out and his heart in his mouth, waiting to see what his life would do to him next. Reacher saw nothing on the ride downtown except snow. Snow on the ground, snow in the air, snow everywhere. The world was slow and silent and shrunken. Traffic was light and was huddled together in narrow, rutted lanes in the middle of roads. Small waffles of snow pelted up off tires in cautious rooster tails. Small convoys joined up and crept along like slow trains, doing 20 miles an hour, or less. But Peterson's cruiser was warm and safe and solid, a heavy car on flat land, with chains on the back and winter tires on the front. No problem. By day, through the snow, the police station looked longer and lower than it had by night. It was a sprawling one-story building built of white brick. It had a flat roof with microwave dishes and radio antennas bolted to steel superstructures. It reminded Reacher of a classic state police barracks. Maybe it had been built from a standardized blueprint. There were plenty of squad cars in the lot, still warm, just parked. Day watch personnel, presumably, coming in from home for briefing ahead of their 8:30 start. There was a small front loader working between the cars, bustling around on rubber caterpillar tracks, shoveling snow into a pile that was already 8 feet high. Peterson seemed relaxed. Reacher figured he was feeling good about the snow. It limited fast access to anywhere, including Janet Salter's house. Intruders would wait for a better day. Stealthy approaches were hard to make through thigh-high drifts. Reacher took the parka, but left the gloves and the hat in the car. Too personal. He would replace them with items of his own. Inside the lobby, there was a different old guy on the stool behind the counter, the day watch aide. Same kind of age as the guy the night before, same kind of civilian clothing, but a different individual. Peterson led Reacher right past him and down a corridor into a large open-plan squad room. It was full of noise and talk and men and women in uniform. They had go cups of coffee. They were making notes. They were reading bulletins. They were getting ready to head out. There were close to 30 of them. A 60-strong department, split equally between day and night duty. Some were young, some were old, some were neat, some were a mess, a real mixed bag. "We doubled in size," Peterson had said. It was hard to keep standards up. Reacher saw the proof right there in front of him. It was easy enough to pick out the new hires from the old hands, and easy to see the friction between them. Unit cohesion had been disrupted, and professionalism had been compromised. Us and them. Reacher saw Chief Holland's problem. He was dealing with two departments in one, and he didn't have the energy for it. He should have retired, or the mayor should have canned him before the ink was dry on the prison deal. But new or old, all the cops were punctual. By 8:30, the room was almost completely deserted. Clearly, the roadblocks were eating manpower, and presumably snow days brought fender benders by the dozen. Only two cops stayed behind. Both were in uniform. One had a name badge that said Kapler. The other had a name badge that said Lowell. Neither one was wearing a belt. No guns, no radios, no cuffs. Both were somewhere in their mid-30s. Kapler was dark, with the remnant of a fading tan. Lowell was fair and red-faced, like a local boy. Both looked fit and strong and active. Neither looked happy. Kapler went clockwise, and Lowell went counterclockwise, and they emptied out trays all around the room and carried the resulting piles of paper away through a blank door farther down the corridor. Reacher asked, "What's that all about?" Peterson said, "Normal clerical duties." "While you're hurting for manpower?" "I don't think so."